All right, everybody, welcome to the podcast. So first thing that I have for you today.
Okay.
I stumbled onto, I don't know how, the Reddit female dating strategy.
Of course.
Which is it appears to be the mirror image of the game. You know, it's like that for women. And similar to that, there's a spectrum of, oh, this is like good, useful, helpful advice that everyone should do, better yourself, all the way to you obviously just are bitter and hate the person, the sex that you're trying to court, you just hate.
But also need, and are
obsessed with.
Yeah. That's always my favorite thing. I hate this gender so much, I'm going to dedicate my life to getting more of them.
And I'm sure this is not to say that the whole thing is terrible, but I did click, I was like, what is this? And I clicked the, hey, read this section of it, and clicked, like, I don't know, one of the top three or four.
You don't have to apologize for going
I'm just telling you deep. Where I got this. So the one thing is I clicked the glossary and there's this idea of breadcrumbing. Breadcrumbing is when a man dangles the prospect of a relationship in front of you by like giving you just a little bit, just enough such that you stick around. And what you need to realize is that he's not relationship material. He's not going to do all
that. Sorry, do you want to start with the ethos of female?
Oh yeah, that's fair. It's that, well, there's going to be some disagreement here. I'll try my best. It's that what you want is it's for straight women who want a quote-unquote high-value man. A high-value man is different for every woman, but generally includes someone who you are attracted to, who provides for you financially. Now, it doesn't have to be totally provides for you, but at least is well off enough that they cover their own stuff and probably contribute to the pool of shared funds. Gives you increased prospects in life, potentially can be a mentor or someone who connects you into careers. And that you should not get weighed down on the low-value men, who can include anyone from, like, super attractive, well-off people that will not commit to you in a relationship nor advance you financially or in your career. That's mm-hmm. a low-value man in this sphere. Or what is more typically considered a low-value man, which is, like, a guy that you have to pay for that, like, doesn't get off the couch, that doesn't do stuff that...
Got it. This is female dating strategies.
Yes.
Okay. So in this world, high-value... means
from the perspective of the people in the subreddit, which is like improves my life. Yeah.
And so you can be low value if you don't bring anything to the table that they view as valuable, or if you have all that stuff but won't give it to them.
Yes. And generally speaking, they want, a lot of them, at some point, families, a partner or
got
something.
It. So this is a subreddit for how to get that definition of a high value man.
And there's an in-between time where maybe you're not going for that, but what else can you get from men? Which is like the really sinister, I think, part of it. So there's this idea of breadcrumbing that I think is totally reasonable that both men and women have to watch out for, which is when someone gives you just enough of what they know that you want in a relationship to dangle the prospect of, you know, if you're good enough and if they like you enough, you can get this guy who hasn't commit to you, or you can get the girl who hasn't slept with you or showed you any romantic affection, you know, this is the flip side of it, to hook up with you. And so they give you just enough. Mm-hmm. And like they say, be careful this, don't do, you know, men who do this are terrible. And then they literally explain in the same, like in a different post, which is a top one, how to breadcrumb men.
Really?
They don't call it breadcrumbing, but it's like, you have to be fun, you know, but not too fun. So one of the things they say, if you don't drink and he offers you a drink, you should accept his drink offer, but toss it out when he's distracted or accidentally knock it off the table so that you appear to be more fun, but are not going to run the risk of getting drunk enough to sleep with him, basically. And there's another thing like, there's often a criticism, they say, that you're selling yourself when you do this for men, that you're like using your sexuality to get things, but you don't sell yourself for things you want ever, because the majority of the time you end up never holding up your end of the bargain, which is like,
that's the literal words in the top post on here.
Which is, and so what they're describing is a woman who goes and gets free dinners and they're proud that they have men around them. And this is, and men in the game talk about this side of women who are trying to extract advantage in life from them, money, career prospects, free food, dinners, experiences, and to be wary of that. And this is that they're talking about how they can get that. You know, I'm not trying to get my guy that I'm going to be with, but in the meantime, I've gotten all this stuff from these guys that think that they're going to hook up with me, and I've been able to get advance in my career way faster. And there's a pride that is being talked about. And it's, I don't have an issue with men writ large or women writ large, but it's just fascinating to see the tribalism split in terms of gender and then talk about how to get what you want exclusive to the feelings of the person who is providing it mm-hmm. for you, and whether or not they're getting what they might like in a relationship, and which is same in men, if you're being honest about it all. Like, if it's fine. Look, if you want to go out there and say, like, look, I'm not going to sleep with any of you, but whoever wants to take me out to dinner tonight to this 4-star restaurant, I'm totally willing to go.
Yeah.
I'd be fine with that.
But then they won't want to take me to dinner, though.
There's plenty of people who would. I think that there's plenty of people that would sign up for that. And then there was, I wish I'd copy-pasted it, because I want to get the quote right. But it was in the comments section. It was, you know, this is just awful. So many men just despise and hate women. Those men are vile. Men are vile. And it was like a sentence apart from one another. It was like, it's just because these men hate women that they can't do it.
I wonder what it is about. I wonder why dating specifically brings out so much vitriol.
Hold on, my dog's going berserk. I don't think it's dating specifically, because politics does it as well. So does sports. So does literally anything where you can
What's
have
going
a team.
On here?
My dogs are going berserk.
For who, though?
I don't know. Hold on, let me go get him. Okay. We're back. Go for it. So anyway, that was my foray into female dating strategy, and my thought was very similar to male dating strategy, which is that there's a broad spectrum of people in there, some of whom advocate lying, taking advantage as much as possible, and deny having this deep-seated vitriol for the opposite sex gender that is so patently obvious, like yep. sentences later. And there's some of stuff which is like just genuine, hey, if you want to get better prospects, improve yourself. And, you know, think about what would make you attractive and then try to become that thing so that you may actually attract the type of person that you're interested in, which is also, I'm sure, and I saw one or two posts, available in that circle community thing. And the last thing related to it, which I thought was interesting, is that, you know, there was these posts that were about knocking your drink over or whatever so that you can pretend to be more fun than you are, which is, it's, and the criticism that I have of that, aside from being immoral, is the same as this kind of stuff that men talk about with all the effort that they put into pretending to be shit, which is like, when you win that guy that thinks that you're fun and you, like, what you have wound up with is a headache that you now have to, like, knock drinks over for and, like, dump them into plants to just maintain this facade of being a more whatever person than you actually are. Like, the prize sucks for you if you have to fake it so hard to win it. And to maintain it is going to be miserable at that point.
I don't think anyone's going to be surprised to hear that there's dudes that lie to try to hook up and then they don't date the girl. And I don't think there's going to be people who are surprised to hear that there's women out there that use men for whatever they want. The question I have is, how do you avoid it? If you're on the other side, you're like, I'm trying to find somebody that's not going to
do this,
throw drinks in the plants and breadcrumb me. Or you're like, I'm trying to find a guy who's not going to just lie to me and promise me the world. And then when they sleep with me, they're going to bounce. Because that to me is the question I think that's interesting. It's like, how do you avoid people from,
you know, what's interesting is that I feel like in each of these communities, that's kind of what it is an attempt to do. It's like they got burned and then there's this overcorrection. Because I remember back in the day, like, one of the advice is, like, never buy a girl a drink. You know, never do this. She's going to put you in this realm of someone who pays and you that she can use for money. And there's a grain of something I understand in there, which is you don't want the relationship to be based on you paying her for her time and attention. But what that gets turned into is you can never just be like, yo, I got this. Like, it's,
well, I actually think that a lot of times comes from an assumption that the drink cost is meaningful to you. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, you don't want to invest. You don't want to show like you're investing in this person with this big sacrifice of buying a drink, but it's certainly not unattractive. If you're just like, I don't care about this, so this is nothing to me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, drink for you, drink for me. None of this matters to me. That definitely doesn't make you less attractive.
You are thinking of perhaps how you've done it in that way, but think of the person in Las Vegas who is like a rich founder who invites a group of girls and all of her friends to just, he'll pay for everything that weekend. Yes, it's not meaningful to him, but he's not necessarily increasing his odds of being viewed as an attractive man as a result, because he's
treating
himself like an ATM.
I don't think he's hurting himself by buying the drinks. I think he's hurting himself with everything else. I think there's a guy that rocks up and does that and does it extremely attractively. And then I think there's someone that does the exact same behavior of buying bottles and does it extremely unattractively. And I think it comes through in other behavior.
Well, it's when your primary contribution to the relationship is you're signaling that it's financial. It's not the fun that you're having.
But exactly. So imagine Rob Gronkowski, but he's not, but no one knows who he is.
Yeah.
But he just walks in and he's just a giant and he's there with his brothers and he buys bottles. And while you're drinking them and trying to get his attention, he's taking his shirt off and talking to his brothers and spinning it around.
Which, by the way, this is, he picks him because we live in Vegas.
This is what he does. He's just there to have fun. He just ignores everybody. And then when he's like, takes his shirt off. I kind of want to sleep with someone. There's a line of people. And yes, he is famous. But I think even if he wasn't, that behavior of buying the bottles would not hurt him because he's just so clearly there to have fun. And getting someone to hook up with him is so not his primary priority and not why he's buying the bottles. And I think that comes through in his behavior. So I actually think it's not the, I used to think that it was, you know, and I still would never start a conversation by saying, hey, you're really pretty. Can I buy you a drink? But that's just because I think there's better ways to start a conversation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't think that the like buying a drink or buying bottles is the problem. Every single Tinder date I've ever been on, I bought the drinks. And I don't think it has ever been a bad idea.
Well, similarly, if you wanted to flip it, like, okay, so that's the piece of advice that men are often told to avoid, which actually comes from a more nuanced point, which is like, have more to offer than simply financial access, right? There's the very standard point that is given to women, which is don't put out too much too easily. Don't sleep with him before X amount of time, which I think follows the same, is advice of the same caliber, which is like, yes, this is generally like, I understand what you're going for, which is you want to weed out the men from your perspective that only want you for sex, and you want to increase the investment from the other potential suitors so that they take you more seriously as a long-term girlfriend rather than short-term hookup.
I also think there's it depends on what your psychic cost is when you sleep with someone and they don't hit you up again. Because I think if that's high, that's the difference, I guess, is if buying a drink and then not getting somebody to pay attention to you hurts you tremendously, then you shouldn't do it. And if sleeping with somebody and then not hearing from them again hurts you tremendously, you shouldn't do it. Because I do think, I cannot think of anybody who did that and it hurt them, like didn't sleep with the person. And because of that, they didn't get a second date. Like they weren't going to get the second date regardless if they slept with them or not.
Yeah.
But I do know, I just can think of one male friend I had who he did not do particularly well with women. He met a woman and they hooked up and I was like, oh, that's great. And he's like, yeah, but I can never see her again because she slept with me on the first date. So she's probably easy. Mm-hmm. I was like, what if she just likes you? Mm-hmm. Like you've just, your self-esteem has eliminated the fact that perhaps you just had a unique connection. And so he did not see that person again, which seemed crazy to me.
Yeah.
So I can understand.
I feel like that was a low self-esteem thing.
That's what I'm saying.
On his part.
Yes. But so I'm saying from the female perspective, like, I can understand why someone would say I try to avoid sleeping with someone on the first date because I've just seen that go badly. And I've never seen somebody who waited till the second date be hurt by that.
Oh, sure. And I agree. And what I'm saying is that is similar, if not maybe not identical, but like, you know, the friend who buys the drinks, they get the drinks and excuse themselves to go to the bathroom. And they're going to go, oh, the problem was that the drinks didn't. It's like, not exactly. Yes. It's not exactly that. But you need a different approach. So we're just going to say that's off limits.
Yeah.
Which is actually not the case. And that's the point that you're making. Similarly, I watched a video of, I think it was the Modern Wisdom. Sometimes I see his podcast come up and I enjoy it.
Never heard of him.
They were discussing, let's see if I can pull it up. You've been making this video on how to get someone out of your league. So this was kind of in my head. And this talks about how increasingly women they cite some studies, but I'm less interested in that because I do feel like I see it anecdotally, are less content with the partners that they are finding themselves with and therefore are staying single later and later into life. And the suggestion is that there's messaging to women that says, don't settle, you know, which is all like great stuff. Don't settle, you know your worth, all these kinds of things.
I actually disagree with that premise. Do you want me to hop in now or wait till the end? Well, I don't think that's why. I don't think that's why people are being single for longer. I actually think that a woman could date a guy at 22 and then be like, oh, I'm not going to settle down, and then date that person's exact clone just in a different body at 28 and settle down. And I think it's because life expectancies are longer. I think because men are doing the same thing, and I don't know who started it. And I think because marriage and kids, the date has been pushed back. Mm-hmm. And so you're just going, well, if I'm going to have kids at 30, then there's not a huge pressure to get married at 22. So unless I think that I'm just really, this is the best person I could possibly find for myself, why wouldn't I just go back out into the world and have fun if I'm going to end up in an identical relationship with someone else later in life?
Well, the argument that they're making is, you know, men, whatever, biologically, culturally, are more likely to want to date the 22-year-old in many cases than that 28-year-old. Mm-hmm. So what they're saying is that, okay, that 22-year-old meets a guy that she likes a lot, but doesn't need to do anything because she's 22, so she doesn't need to settle down. She's going to wait till she's 28. Maybe she's going to wait till she's 29. At 29, she is not as attractive to that same guy as she might have been at 22. So therefore, she no longer has the top pick over the span of her lifetime. And that's sort of what they're talking about, is that, I'll put it this way.
I wonder if that's true, though. I wonder, because, like, let's say you're 22 and you're dating a 25-year-old. I wonder if the 29-year-old just doesn't end up dating a 36-year-old.
A 36-year-old man.
Yeah, who's like the same level of attractiveness and success and intelligence and humor.
Maybe. Well, I guess I'll put it up. Let's frame it a different way. If you are a woman, the scope of men, and this isn't actually how it works, but if you can imagine, like, the least desirable guy, generally speaking, though it's not going to be 100% agreed upon over here, the most desirable man in the world is whatever, Henry Cavill or something. He's over here. The range of men that you could potentially sleep with goes really high up this way. Like, the amount of those men that'd be willing to spend a night with you if they met you out at a bar is up to here. But the range of those men that would be willing to date you exclusively monogamously does not go as high up. It is a smaller section of that.
Yeah, which is just a way of saying that, which is a way of saying men will sleep with someone that they aren't interested in dating.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
I agree with that.
And so their argument and what they're saying is that women are increasingly, because of the tendency towards hookup culture and Tinder, they have experiences with men one night, two nights, whatever, that are super high, quote unquote, agreed upon high value men. Men that a lot of people want, that are tougher to pin down because they have a ton of options. Mm-hmm. And they are less satisfied.
Who they were unable to, if they wanted to date them at 22, they could not date them.
Probably would have been, would have been too hard.
Yet. Okay, so this is a guy that will sleep with them but would never date them, regardless of their age or station
roughly
in life.
Speaking, okay. Yes. And that those experiences create dissatisfaction with the person that you wind up with later in life. And I don't know if this is true.
Yeah, I don't know.
I thought that it was interesting. I thought it was an interesting suggestion that having an experience of, and again, this all assumes that there is roughly a linear spectrum, having an experience of sleeping with someone or being with someone makes you less satisfied with the type of person that you actually can wind up with.
I don't know about that. That would seem to have a couple of assumptions in it, which is that that person is still thinking about that they could get a person like that who they were never able to get in the first place. Mm-hmm. And that therefore they're like married to someone but longing for someone that they never dated. Like, this isn't even an ex-boyfriend. This is just a one-night stand guy.
And I have no way of knowing if this is generally true. I don't know enough people in this situation to even speak on it well, anecdotally, but I did think that the philosophical model of, like, look, this is what you're capable of experiencing in a short term. This is what you're capable of getting in a long term experience, and that is a smaller frame.
That is not my understanding of what leads to a lot of divorces, especially in the cheating department. I feel like what leads to a lot of divorces is sleeping with someone who happens to be in your orbit, the tennis coach, your child's friends. Parent, you know what I mean? Your maid or employee or boss. Like, I feel like a lot of the affairs aren't hunting down the one night stand that you had, or even pining for that person and trying to get somebody who's similar to them. I feel like most of the affairs are who is just in my life a lot, and I don't have a lot of options, but this person is one of them because I'm forced into proximity with them. Mm-hmm. And that's most of the affairs that I can think of.
Sure. And that might be how it's acted. It's also that some of the dissatisfaction inherent in the relationship might be of a comparison to an idea. I do think it's fair to say,
but I'm saying then they don't, it's like, it would seem weird. I guess if you're dissatisfied with your husband, I can literally, this is like a literal example from my life. And then, someone's wife ends up hooking up with the tennis instructor. Mm-hmm. Like that's not, he's not Henry Cavill. He's just the guy that you pay to teach tennis to your kids, but he just happens to be around all the time while your husband's at work.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? It feels more like a thing of convenience and proximity than it does an attempt to mirror a hookup that that woman had at age 22.
Well, perhaps it's not an attempt to mirror that, but it is an expression of the general dissatisfaction with this felt with like the husband, I could do better. There's this general feeling of like, this isn't as good as it gets. And again, I don't know if any of this is true. I thought it was an interesting suggestion.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough because divorce rates are up, but also back in the day, you could just hit your wife and cheat on her and not get divorced. So I actually don't know if dissatisfaction, like basically the premise of this is dissatisfaction now that the dating age has been pushed back is higher now than it was in 1920. But I don't know about that. I don't know if that's, if you just have,
just horribly
you can
dissatisfied
just have divorces
and
now. Yeah. And you can work. And so back in the day, you have the same, it's not because you hooked up with someone at a younger age. You started dating your high school sweetheart and you married them. You were miserable the whole time. But if you say anything, he's going to beat you. Mm-hmm. If you sleep with him, he's going to divorce you and you're destitute. And so you're just miserable, but you stay married.
Yeah.
I actually don't, I'm not convinced that the divorce rate is increasing because dissatisfaction is increasing.
Yeah. There was a stat that they rolled out that I was like, this doesn't prove what it seems to be implied to prove here, which is that one of the biggest predictors of extramarital affairs is premarital sex, basically, which is to say, like, if you have more sex early in your life before marriage, you are more likely to have an affair.
Yeah,
but that's also like, also correlated with being non-religious.
That's what I'm saying. So like they're positing that the more sexual you are pre-marriage, the more sexual you are post-marriage. And they're not taking into account the fact that if you don't have sex before marriage, you're deeply religious, which means that you think if you cheat, you're going to go to hell.
Yes.
So it's not the fact that the sex was had. It's the fact that you don't have this overarching fear.
And I find that to be a much more plausible explanation, or at least to account for a lot of that particular.
Yeah. And again, that doesn't mean that that religious marriages are happier. It just means that they stay together because they're afraid of going to hell.
Well, this was
they might be miserable together.
So this was an interesting thing that I think is being talked about a lot when people discuss marriage. So one of the things that they are, I believe, correctly pointing out is that with advances in technology, with women having more control over their finances, being more active in the workplace, they do not need a partner in the same way that they did. And so
if you can't work, you need somebody to provide for you while you do something else to make them feel like this is a good deal.
Yes. And for society, having a bunch of non-nuclear families and a section of men at the end of society that will not be able to get partners because the women that are available are sort of sharing and taking turns with the men that have lots of options, and they're happy to do that because they don't feel like they need a boyfriend or a husband and they pay for their own stuff and they'll date casually. Mm-hmm. That might not be the best for society.
Sure.
But I'm also not convinced that there's, like, what's to be done about it.
Yeah,
It's interesting, like, there's this, it has been the case, I think, throughout all of human history, that because of the material conditions of the earth, men and women were better off together. Mm-hmm. And, like, the nuclear family was a really good solution to the difficulties of harvesting and having kids.
So was the extremely close-knit tribe.
Yes.
Which has also gone
and
away.
So this is, I'm going like, are we entering a phase where the things that have always put men and women at odds, that men are technically, from a biological and evolutionary standpoint, better off spreading their seed, and women are better off consolidating on one person that has a ton of resources to take care of them, and that has always been something that has moved them in different directions but has been reined in by environmental constraints. Now that those environmental constraints are being lifted, it's like, what is the new average or standard way that people who are fairly affluent are going to carry on, conduct or not conduct relationships with one another?
Well, I also think I'm subconsciously guilty of what I'm about to say, but the idea that divorce is failure and staying married is success is also a very bad scorecard. And I do this, and I'm, that's how you view things.
If what you care about is the happiness of the people in the relationship, yes, and not the stability of society.
If you're solving for happiness and you find out someone got divorced, it's like, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. It should be, oh, congrats. You've clearly been miserable for some period of time, and now you're free of that relationship that was making you completely miserable. Mm-hmm. And that's not how I view it subconsciously. That's not my instinct when I hear about it. And I think the same thing happens with a lot of people. So, you know, you hear this and you go, oh, man, this is tragic. Divorce rates are up. You go, oh, maybe the exact same amount of marriages are miserable as always were, but now people can get out of
them. Can exit them.
And maybe lifelong relationships are hard and people have always just had a 45% success rate at it, but
they dealt with each other. They just were the only option.
Oh, I'm just going to be miserable and make your life miserable and we'll fight and it'll be awful and then we'll die.
Yeah.
So, and now you don't have to do that. So I don't know. I actually don't know the answer to that question.
Yes. Now that we men and women writ large need one another less because of technological advancements and the ability to get a lot of what relationship brought to you via apps on your phone and, you know,
and that's not just Tinder, by the way. That's also like you can order food, you can order massage, dog walk.
Yeah.
No matter which gender you are, you can
doctor
make
on
money.
Demand. I'm sick. I need someone to take care of me. You know, yeah. like all of these things are you can outsource them. Not saying that that's the right thing to do, but it is lifting the pressure to have one person that is there with you till death do you part through happiness. And
I also wonder, did they mention if the desire to have kids has gone down?
I don't know. I didn't hear it. I'm not certain.
I'd be curious about that. Because I wonder, that's obviously a big part of partnering up and having a life partner is having kids and wanting to raise them. Yeah. In a two-parent household, which a lot of people, that's a goal for them if they're going to have kids. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want kids, I could see that also releasing some pressure around.
Well, that's a big thing is when you add the equation of kids and the stability of an upbringing for them, it's definitely not good for them to be in a home with a mom who hates dad and vice versa. Mm-hmm. But it's like you want to try harder to make things work when there are children present to give them the best upbringing and chance that they have. And when you remove that, and if you get more people that are not having kids, don't want to have kids, what do we have to stay together? Do we need each other? Can we not have these weird new arrangements?
Is that a contributing factor where people don't want to have kids? And so then they go, well, I don't need to stress about this so much. I can kind of just date as it's fun.
And if you have fewer women that I don't know that this is the case, that want to have kids, the biological clock, which is still like, yes, your dating potential is going to be largest in your younger years when you're considered more attractive, but like you no longer have this actually finite
I think as soon as they figure out how to make it so that having kids is as easy at 22 and 32 and 42, you'll see the dating and marriage and having kids age get pushed back even further.
You're really saying like it's just easier to freeze eggs, it's easier to like
in vitro is not such a huge pain in the ass, it's not expensive and painful. Just imagine a hypothetical world where Genie came and they said, you know what? From 22 to 52, everyone's going to have the same chance of having smart, healthy babies. Mm-hmm. Miscarriage rates will be the same. Your fertility will be identical. We're just going to it'll just be a flat line. And then at 52, it'll go to zero. I think you'd see an even bigger push towards later marriages, later kids. I think the biological clock is one of the biggest reasons that it hasn't gone further. Because life expectancies have gone further. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think financial independence has gone further away with student loans and stuff. I think the idea of what being an adult was and all the phases that you hit, they've all gotten pushed back further in terms of when you're financially independent and when all that stuff. And so, I think as soon as they figure out how to make having kids a non-issue in your 40s, you're going to see the average age for marriage and kids get pushed back another decade.
Yep. But anyways, so that was what I did. What you got?
What do I have today? Oh, this is cool. This is just something I saw that I wanted to shout out because it's just an awesome ingenuity thing I saw. There's a company in Nairobi that's taking plastic trash, just litter. They have a huge litter problem. They melt it down, mix it with sand to make a concrete alternative. They make bricks out of it, and they pave their roads because 90% of the roads in Nairobi are unpaved. So it cleans up litter, and it makes a concrete alternative that's cheaper than concrete.
Very cool.
I thought that was sick, and it reminded me of Boyan Slott, who I know you like. So I wanted to shout it out because...
I like it.
I want less Instagrammers in the world and more people doing that. So I want to bring attention to it.
Okay, next topic. Let's talk about Instagram.
Every TikToker out there, if we could get one more Nairobi inventor, we'd be much better off.
Yeah, and who knows if it's economically viable or long-lasting. A lot of these stories cannot pan out. But I generally, those closed-loop ecosystem things where they take trash and make it something valuable are very cool.
Yeah.
As opposed to the straight-line ecosystem, which is like, we have this thing, we use it all up, and we throw it else. Oh,
you mean the exact opposite of this, which is my giant pet peeve, which is that companies can print out paper advertisements, mail them to you,
God.
And then they're not responsible for you having to throw them out or recycle, or the fact that you can just outsource to society the cleaning this up part makes me so angry, because I do not want this garbage, and now the world has to deal with it.
Huge externality right there. So it's when you get those coupons that most people don't use, and it's like often retirees with the time to cut out and who need to save those coupon monies and are not active on whatever internet where they could get digital coupons, that it's worth it to send it to my home, which does not have a retiree, for who I've never used a coupon.
And
like
the only
that.
Reason they can afford to do it is because they're not charged for the fact that there's now this paper in the world that someone has to dispose
or
of.
Or my labor. They've just dumped trash on my doorstep and I have to walk it. And it's like, okay, that's only going to cost you a few cents. But if you had to pay the few cents of everybody who you inconvenienced with the trash that you sent to their home, like this would, if you had to suffer the externalities of what you're doing, all the labor, all the waste, you would target much more precisely.
Yeah,
maybe you
couldn't
still
afford
send coupons.
You couldn't afford it.
Yeah, but you'd like have to find out where people that use the coupons were. And you'd have to be like, if you want more, opt check yes and we'll send you more. I hate that stuff.
Yeah, it's my least favorite.
You know, the fact that I get stacks of mail, none of which I need.
Yeah.
That's the, and I like every now and then it's like, oh my God, it was my birthday. I got a card.
No, also I called to opt out and they're like, yeah, just so you know, our system, it may take 2 months for, I'm like, this is fucking bullshit.
Well, and again, the fact that if you guys have run the numbers and it is not worth it for you to have an opt out policy, like you got to find them, call them, and then we'll throw you. It's so much cheaper for you to just cut down the Amazon than to stop sending me trash in the mail. And it's just literal trash to you and I. Like, I guess one man's trash, another man's treasure. But when you get something without looking at it and dispose of it, that is literal trash that is being shipped to me that a postman has. Yeah, it's awful.
So, another one, random one. I just saw this on Reddit today, and I know that this occurs in the world, but it is fascinating how blatant it is to me. I forget the organization now, but someone did 5 months of research into the insider trading that occurs in the U.S. government. 49 members of Congress, 182 senior congressional staffers just straight up violated the Stock Act. They insider traded based on information they had that they weren't supposed to act on. So that means that if you know COVID's coming.
I watched this happen, by the way, in my life. I'll say no more, but I literally watched a person with connections I know receive information and act on it.
This can be knowing COVID's coming and selling all your stock so that when it has the giant crash, you don't suffer any of the losses and you just buy back in at the bottom. This can mean that knowing that you're going to pass an agricultural law and buying or shorting a certain stock because you know the company's going to get slammed by the law, but no one in the public eye knows that this law is getting passed yet. And so they asked Nancy Pelosi, hey, do you think that maybe there should be a ban on buying individual stocks so that this doesn't happen because it's illegal? And she obviously says no.
Why?
Because she's making money off of it.
Yeah, but like, just you're so old, like by the time that it happens you won't.
She says no so fast, faster than you've ever seen. They literally don't get the question out. She goes, no, what? And then they finish the question, and then she gives a longer answer.
Well, I could imagine an answer that is like, look, if we can sequester the information that you have, you should be able to buy individual stocks.
I'll tell you the answer.
Like, that's an effective, if you're telling me that, like, hey, this person only has access to certain things, and therefore they should be able to purchase Apple, which has nothing to do with their job.
Her answer to me was the most cliche, I got my hand caught in the cookie jar, and I have to America my way out of this.
Go for it.
She said, our country runs on a free market. And the people who run the country should be able to participate in that free market.
Whoa. Like,
you're just saying words that you think are going to get you out of this that don't justify insider trading at all.
That's
because
moronic.
that would be why anyone with insider information should be allowed to trade in the stock market, because they live in a country based on a free market, America. And so why can't I, as the CEO of my company, dump my stock right before my earnings report comes out? It's a free market. It was the absolute laziest cliche answer. Shout out to Nancy Pelosi for the gem.
America. I mean, and here's the thing, and I understand that she's on television, has to answer this stuff, but for a lot of the policies that she's trying to get to go through, an absolutely, if she finds it reasonable, that's a fantastic rebuttal. Well, America runs on a free market, and therefore this redistribution is interference in the free market, and we shouldn't do it. Oh, you know, the Dodd-Frank Act, this, that, the regulation. Well, America's a free market, and it's been a free market. It's just of course, like,
unregulated at all.
It is.
Get rid of government subsidies for corn and things of that nature.
Yeah, we shouldn't. It's America is a free market, and it's interesting, and I think some of it occurs. I was kind of thinking about this week, though I haven't clarified it in my mind. So we've talked about this. So much of the things that people say to justify beliefs and positions that they have does not do the job.
Yeah.
It doesn't explain why you do this, and if you did believe this, a lot of your other positions become totally incoherent.
If this
is what is meaningful to you. And I think some of it has to be because you're on television, you have 30 seconds, and you're not going to be able to give the whole argument. I understand that.
Also because here's the real reason. It's just corruption, and Congress people want to get rich. So why would they ever penalize themselves for doing the thing that they want to do? Yeah. Like, they're in charge of policing themselves.
I don't know. We've said this before, but this has nothing to do with Congress. But the idea, is there a good reason that cap gains is taxed at a lower rate than regular income? Is there any?
I mean, I'm sure there is. First of all, I don't know the best argument for it. What would be my guess?
Well, it's like to incentivize investment, which is, that's a non-argument. Like, people wouldn't invest money. They'd rather just have it stay flat than have some of their earnings taxed. Have all of their earnings taxed, but still make earnings?
I could Google it. Honestly, I mean, I don't know what the steel man is.
I'd be curious what the steel man is. Let's
Google it, because I don't want to guess and get it wrong.
Well, we could just do it next week. We don't need to take the time.
No, we'll do it. Okay. Justin can just fast forward
magic
to the future. Woo, 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 woo. Why are cap gains taxed lower than income? All right, I'm just going to read this, and then we can do. So,
what is this from?
Taxfoundation.org.
Okay.
The justification for a lower tax rate on capital gains relative to ordinary income is threefold. First, it is not indexed for inflation. It is a double tax. Oh, no, this is all three. It is not indexed for inflation. It's a double tax, and it encourages present consumption over future consumption. So, one, the tax is not adjusted for inflation. So, if your assets appreciate at a nominal rate, then inflation occurs, so your actual return is lower, whereas wages should rise with inflation.
Should, but by the way, aren't guaranteed to.
I'm just saying, man. I'm just a mouthpiece right now.
I know, okay, but so these are one. Such poor arguments.
Two, capital gains tax is a part of a long line of federal taxation for the same dollars of income. First, you get your wages, which are taxed. Then corporate income is taxed if you choose to invest in corporate equities. So the thing you're investing in has you get taxed, then you invest in an equity. The equity pays taxes before they can distribute any capital gains to you. And then you're paid dividends and cap gains that are taxed a third time.
Yeah.
So that's the third reason that it's lower, is because it's the third time that money's being taxed. And then capital gains, like nearly all of the federal tax code, is a tax on future consumption. Future personal consumption in the form of savings is taxed, while present consumption is not. By favoring present over future consumption, savings are discouraged. So the capital gains tax is lower to try to encourage savings.
I don't even know. So wait a second. So let's say that the capital gains tax were 40%. Are they saying that fewer people would invest?
It's kind of that same argument where it's like, oh, if we make the income taxes too high, people will stop wanting to work, which doesn't describe any of the wealthy people I know. If you're taxed at 45%, if we raise this to 49%, they're probably just going to stop working once they've made $1 million because it's not worth working anymore because they're paying 49% of every dollar, which is not at all what motivates most of the rich people I know that are run by.
You can make an argument that that's inappropriate, not fair, whatever, but like the idea that people would stop working,
they'll keep working because I think a lot of super wealthy people are motivated by.
What they'll do is move, is what they'll do. They'll go somewhere with lower taxes and continue to work, is likely what would happen. Or they'll swallow it.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is,
they're not going to quit because they're.
Yeah, people like Bezos and Musk, it's not like they have an amount of money in their head that they're aiming for, and once they get there, they're just going to go to an island and quietly drink coconuts. So they're clearly driven by something, whether it's to help change the world or the desire for social status or to win the game and accrue as much power as possible. But I've never been, listen, I don't want to raise taxes on myself, but I've never been persuaded that raising taxes would cause people to work less hard. It's certainly not true of me that if you raise my taxes 5%, I would do 5% less work.
Or any percent.
This is not, it's not at all what you would see in my behavior. I might move states if California raised taxes 25%, let's say, and Texas had 0%, but I wouldn't stop working. So I've always found that argument to be unpersuasive personally. I don't know literally anybody who, after a tax code changed, worked less because of it.
Got it. So we don't need to harp on this too much, but I find all of those very weak. I think the inflation one especially is just, okay, then let's index for inflation. You know what I mean? Fine. Let's take the inflation rate. We can index for that, and that then you can be taxed at whatever, 40% or something like that if you're a top earner.
I'm curious to see if I can find a better argument.
I don't think it makes any sense. The idea that labor would be taxed potentially up to whatever, like 45-50% and sometimes above depending on the state, and the fruit of that labor being capital being taxed at 20%, it just doesn't seem to have any rhyme or reason to it, and it seems totally regressive in terms of its disproportionate benefit to people who have capital to go earn money for
them. I also find this fascinating because, the rates that you're talking about are interesting, but so they're talking about, and this isn't to say the policy is good, it's just that the counter argument's bad, boosting the capital gains tax rate from 24% to 28%. And the counter argument is that it would discourage business investment. If you're in the top tax bracket, you're making $1 million a year. What are you going to do? The tax rate for capital gains goes up from 24% to 28%. So you're just going to take an extra $100,000 and spend it instead of investing it?
No, it's ridiculous. It's absurd.
You're going to keep it in cash instead of investing in equities because 0% return on cash?
But you will see behaviors change. Like if there was an announcement that, hey, cap gains is going to go up, you'd see a massive sell-off. Sure. You know, you would see behaviors. Well,
what you would see is, and this is a different problem, what you'd see is just people trying to keep investing but skirt the taxes.
Exactly. So yes, that's right, what would happen is people would continue to try to make money off their capital, as much of it as best they could, but I don't think they would stop investing. They would move, change jurisdictions, all that kind of stuff. Groovy, how come he pushed you away from me? MacGruber's coming out, the new movie TV show. My dog is named MacGruber because he's got the same haircut. You guys might notice if you ever see him in here. Anything else that you had?
Well, hold on. I'm fascinated by this. I'm sorry. We're going to have to. I really want to know what the answer is.
I don't think there's a good answer, except that rich people made the system and they decided that, and then they said, it's not fair because the inflation, and it's not fair because of multiple and they just came up with things that they didn't rigorously say, does that actually make sense?
Labor income is taxed when it's earned, so investments are made from after-tax earnings, so capital gains are just another bite out of the investor's money. I mean, that is true.
That is true, but the idea that $1 once had should never be taxed again is like, wait a second, we tax dollars every time they change hands.
That's what sales tax is.
That's like, wait, you're telling me that once a dollar is moved, it's just mine forever and there can never be another tax on it? I don't understand. It's not how we treat taxes. When dollars move, when value is created, we the government sticks their hand in and takes some out. Except here, no, that's your dollar forever, no matter what you do or what it makes.
They got the inflation bite, same argument that inflation hits capital gains.
Okay, then I mean, it's you could just make the same arguments to make concessions for labor, or you could factor them in such that you still had whatever the tax rate be the same, but have some sort of index for inflation. But labor doesn't have that same offer.
I don't know. It actually does seem like those are the arguments. So if you like them or if you don't like them, those are the arguments for why cap gains are.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty obvious. The people that made the rules wanted to make money off their money. I get it. It's very.
What, dude? Are you saying that our government is set up to help the people that set up the government?
Yeah, I am. Bold strategy.
It doesn't make sense. Why would there be lobbyists?
Yeah. Well, we've mentioned this, but somebody was bringing up that the government is run by white men and it was set up by white men to help white men. And I've said it before, but I'll repeat it. the idea that whites or men are a coalition that are just looking out for one another is so goofy. Like, I totally agree with that the rules were set up by a group of people who, in addition to perhaps some humanitarian aims, set up rules to benefit them and their kin, is misapplied to white men. Like the founders were like, yo, that dude in Appalachia, that poor farmer, we got to have his back. You know what I mean? 300
years
from
now, cap games
it's
law.
Like, yo, there's a guy somewhere. Let's go help him. Like, not women, though. It's just so. And are there some unfair rules? Were there some especially? Yes. But this idea that the system was set up for white men to benefit is like a way too broad a view of the people who have made the rules. It was set up to benefit people in that club, with that last name, in that kinship circle, but not some fucking, I mean this from their perspective, it's not some yokel on the other side of the nation in Oklahoma busting his ass, you know, oh, he's white, we gotta cover it for him. It's just silly when I hear people say things like that. Anyways, what we got?
Reddit's gonna IPO.
Is it?
Yep. So our charisma coach shot me a message. He said, hey, I know you go on Reddit. They're going to IPO. I thought that was interesting. I said, okay, why do you think that matters? Like, I don't care when a company's public or private. He's like, well, get ready for more ads, more censorship, controversial, quote unquote, communities being quarantined more often.
It's already done.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. He's just saying this is going to become a much worse product in the name of pursuing profit, which I think is a fair argument.
I watched, sorry to pivot so quickly, but you reminded me, I spoke once to a guy who watched the podcast who has a channel and we've talked about, I think it's Magnates Media. He did a video on Uber that we've talked about having the same thing.
But oh, just being a way worse product as it grows. Dude,
but he broke down the shitty things that they did. They were, and to the degree that his video is accurate, vicious in the things that they did with Lyft and the poaching drivers and the ordering Lyfts and then canceling them. And staging protests outside city council with Uber employees that pretended to just be concerned citizens. Like, yeah, incredible. And also with the product that was obviously heavily subsidized. Uber has lost money hand over fist. And now that it's time to make money, that they're public, the product is horrible, terrible, so much worse. Oh, the other thing, that drivers that had both Uber and Lyft installed on their phones, they had all of these background shit going on. Mm-hmm. They would give them more money with Uber. They would give them higher bonuses, better rides, better everything to get them to cancel their Lyft.
Yeah.
So like hardcore monopolistic anti-competitive sales practices in order to eliminate the competition and then have a shitty, awful product once there was no competition.
Well, it's not a terrible product. It's just the same thing as like a cab company now.
It's a cab company that's lost billions of dollars.
And it's a worse product than they started with.
Yes, in an attempt to corner the market, which is funny because cabbies were not everyone, but had these mafia ties. You know, like they said, okay, if we're going to beat these guys, we got to kind of, we're going to have to like not listen to the rules and play a tougher game. So yeah, you got this crappy new Uber product as well. But yeah, I don't really know too much about the Reddit IPO. I imagine that they'll find ways to monetize that previously been unexplored, though. Yeah.
Just thought it was interesting that I don't think it's a bad instinct. His first instinct was, okay, this is going to immediately mean Reddit will be worse in the future. Mm-hmm. So that's his prediction. We'll see if it plays out. And then I got one more thing, and then something Justin wanted me to talk about. But I had a question because of something you said on the podcast last week. You said, I don't know if it was for Patreon or regular, that after doing psychedelics, you feel like the universe has your back, right? That's fair? My question is that unique to you, or do you think the universe has everyone's back?
Do I think that it has everyone's back? I don't know.
Okay.
So you
have a strong sense that the universe will take care of you, right? You cannot make bad decisions. Everything will work out.
Well, it's a little bit more nuanced, but I think that's, if you wanted to say it shortly, yes. Not that I cannot make bad decisions, and not that. It's kind of what we talk about with charisma. Everything's going to be okay. Does that mean everybody's going to like you? No. No. Does that mean you're not going to fall on your face and break your nose? No. But it's all going to be okay.
Yeah. Does that include the fact that even if one were to die horribly, that's okay because they just become part of the universe?
I had two things that I got for me.
Okay.
One is this, like, yeah, even if you died horribly, it would be okay. Like, which is like, oh, so you could tell me literally nothing about my life. Like, it's still the same question mark grab bag that it's always been, with a different perspective, like, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I also had a sense, which I'm not certain of, but I was like, but you picked a good one. Like, you picked a good ride this time around. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be any suffering in it, but I got a sense that, like, man, I picked a good one.
Okay, so it is you specific in some regard. Yeah. Okay, that was my question, because as I walked away from it, I was thinking, that is a nice thought to have, that the universe has your back. That's a great psychedelic takeaway. And then I was thinking, it reminded me a bit of, then how do you explain atrocity? Like, the same argument against having a benevolent, mm-hmm. all-powerful, all-knowing God, which is why does a kid die of AIDS at 2 years old?
So I'll give you the, if I had to, which is...
Well, it sounds like what you're saying is, like, everyone's going to be okay, because no matter what, you return to universal consciousness, yes. But also
And also
specifically Charlie Hooper,
yeah.
It, like, if all of our souls picked ahead of time what level of difficulty we were going to play on...
I picked a good one.
I picked easy.
Yeah.
So you have a very unique to you sense that it's all going to be okay.
Correct.
That doesn't have to describe
the extreme suffering.
Horrible things Correct. Happen to other Correct. People. Got it. Okay. I was just curious. Mm-hmm. So it's very you specific.
It's both. It's a sense that, wow, it's all okay. Everything is okay. Even the suffering is okay, right. Even though it's difficult.
But
and
you don't fear suffering because you think you've got a easy, you, the universe is going to, like, slot you into a less suffering roller coaster.
Not that it's going to be less suffering, but that there will be learnings in it that I want to, like, I had a sense on psychedelics of, and I think this is a semi-common experience, of having chosen my experience ahead of time in some way. And also, like, a little of, like, you picked a good one. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not going to be immense suffering, but it's almost like when the sun sets on my life and I look at the sunset on my last day, I'm going to go, damn, what a ride. Mm. Like, that's the feeling. And not that, like, horrible shit might not happen in between, but it's going to come together by the end, was the sense that I had.
And when you, so I'm just curious about your personal theology. When you say that there's universal consciousness and then it splits off into being an individual, that is for the experience, right? That's not, you're not supposed to learn lessons and bring them back to universal consciousness, right? You're just meant to,
I don't know,
go have the experience of living as Charlie Hooper, because it's to be infinite. Universal consciousness, just get some spice, go be Charlie Hooper for a little bit.
I don't know. I actually don't, like, people have theologies that my experience fits nicely into. Mm-hmm. But if I'm speaking about just my experience, it doesn't have an ideology or a universal explanation to it. Like, it was just the limits of what I experienced firsthand are not as broad as, oh, it's all source, it's all universal consciousness. It was just like, no, it's all okay. Everything is okay. It's all perfect. And you picked a good one.
You picked this ride ahead of time. You opted. You existed prior to Charlie Hooper.
Some
selected a ride that is the life of Charlie Hooper, mm-hmm. and are under the impression that what you picked is a largely fun ride.
I would not say fun. I would say beautiful is perhaps the word, okay. which does not exclude suffering and tragedy. But I have a sense that I could be wrong, that I am not going to die with, like, why have you forsaken me on my lips? You know what I mean? Like, that I will die going, I get it. Like, that's kind of the sense. And I think, totally reasonable to expect, that there's going to be periods of, like, you have forsaken me. Like, how could you have done this to me? How could you have taken the person that I love? How, like, this is meaningless, empty, and through that journey, it will make sense by the end.
Okay. That was all. So it is not necessarily to say that every person on the planet, the has universe has their back in the same way.
No,
the universe has correct. Everyone's back to a varying degree.
To a degree that felt willful, almost. You know what I mean? For me, and I don't know if anybody else, or I'll come be everybody else, or I'll become be every object. Those are beliefs that other people have, is, you know, you will just continue to exist as every possible existence infinitely till the end of time, and you'll do it all. Mm. That wasn't my experience, but it's my experience could be explained with that worldview. I just feel more comfortable in this go around, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, we don't have to dive into it, but the question I think people would have is why then do some people have such tough goes of it if they had to select ahead of time?
Well, I think in that space of, I mean, I can only say, like, I play Romance of the Three Kingdoms. I play Total War Three Kingdoms. I also played Romance of the Three Kingdoms. And eventually you pick hard mode legendary after you beat it on easy because you realize it's temporary and finite in a way that you are not, and you pick crazy shit just for the experience of it. So I don't know if video games are a fair analogy. Yeah, but when you're the infinite selecting finite experiences, you might choose some weird shit, you know? Literally anything imaginable.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't think that's impossible. I think it's probably dissatisfying to certain people that are going through tough times.
Oh, it's not meant to make anybody feel better.
Right.
And well, this
I think being told that they picked it ahead of time might piss some people off. But not a counter.
Well, I actually don't think that they did. I just know that I felt like I did. I don't have a worldview that I think is true. I just have the experiences that I had.
Well, given that it's all simulation, which is my
theology,
maybe you picked your life, was I'll be this guy who has no suffering. And then the AI was like, okay, well, I'll think I'm conscious, but my life will be really hard because I didn't get to pick it because I'm AI.
Because I'm supporting cast. So
I didn't get to opt into this. I was created. I think I'm conscious.
Yeah.
This sucks. Yeah. Which is also possible.
Yeah. And I definitely didn't walk away being like, oh, this is good news for other people.
Yeah.
I didn't be like, oh, you should tell everyone. It's going to make them feel good. Like that definitely was not in there. It was just my... You would ask like something that there's a JFK line. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. I think there's suffering and then there's the fear of suffering. Mm-hmm. And what I would say I got a sense of is you can relax on the fear. Suffering may or may not come, but like the terror about it is no longer as necessary. So yeah, there still might be like a tremendous amount of suffering for all that I know.
No, I was just thinking because you said the universe has my back, and I think a lot of people don't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
But your takeaway is maybe it has your back to a lesser degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yes, and here's the thing. It's all perfect, it's all this, but like that's up here, or even you could say down here and whatever the thing is. Like everything is perfect as it is, war, rape, disease, famine, like it's all perfect and beautiful. Okay, but that's deeply unsatisfying to those who are experiencing those horrible things.
Yeah, 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 because
right?
Doesn't feel it.
It doesn't feel perfect, right? So then there's the level of like, what is pleasing to me as a human? And I was like, oh, I got a pretty good one on that level as well.
Got it.
So I'm cool down here. We're all cool down here. It's all perfect down here. But I also
got it. Okay. Cool. Yeah, I was just curious. You said it and I walked away and I was thinking about it.
Yes.
So I just wanted to ask you about
it. I'm mostly cool. But I could be wrong, you know? I don't know. That's just this. That was just the experience that I had, which many people would assume was just a figment of my imagination, and you know, like a mirage in the desert, not corresponding to anything true, just an idea.
Yeah. So,
who knows? There is one thing that I wanted to say, which is we didn't have the link last week. We still had a link, but for our DM, if you guys want to do Dungeons and Dragons, we talked about him. He's fantastic. We put a link to his like public profile, but he actually has, in addition, a private Google form that you could fill out if you'd like to play Dungeons and Dragons. He's fantastic. Games are $250 split between the number of players, 3 to 6. You can say how many people you want to play. I've had a fucking blast with him. We've all played before and he's got availability. So if you want to check him out, nothing in it for us, but wanted to shout him out because he's got openings and I think you guys might like it. Throw your information in the link in the description and he'll reach out to you. Cool.
All right. I got one. So I know that you both used to be polygamous, but now are no longer are. As somebody that's currently struggling with the question around this topic, I was wondering if you could touch on why you changed your personal views on polyamory for you and what your reasoning was behind your current stance.
Well, here were my views growing up. Unquestioning monogamy is the only way to do things for the first 24 years of my life. And then everything in my life was like, do I have to have this job? Do I have to do this? Do I need to live in America? And it was like, all the old rules can be tossed out because they make no sense and were invented by dumb, boring old people. All right? And so I was like, I can do whatever, you know? And it was fucking awesome. Like, I I moved abroad, dated multiple people, like did everything as differently as I thought I could.
Walked on my hands.
Walked on my hands down the street because why not?
Wore my underwear over my pants. I did it all, baby.
I did it all. And then what I experienced was one, well, this is the thing. Monogamy is oftentimes easy in those initial phases and then can over time sometimes get more and more difficult. Polygamy was difficult in the initial phases in the sense that you're having hard conversations with people right away. Mm-hmm. Like there's no honeymoon phase of, I hear so great. There is a honeymoon phase, but it's got this extra layer of, you know, and I'm not hopelessly and solely committed to this relationship. I'm pursuing other relationships.
Or the person you're dating does feel that way and you don't feel that way or you prevent yourself from feeling that way. And now you have conflict.
Yes. But it was still a really cool thing to go through because I was experiencing like, you know, lots of people have these fantastic first 6 months and mine were a little bit harder and then they were having, you know, tougher back ends. So that was interesting and I saw some of the difficulty. The difficulty of dating multiple people is one, if it's open on both ends, most people get very jealous. Mm-hmm. And I put a tremendous amount of effort into undoing that in myself, a lot of time, money, effort, and made little to no progress. I've made more progress in everything in my life than I did in being less jealous in those sorts of situations. And so that was tough. And then there is also, even if like, and then I had relationships where I was, look, here's the deal. I get super jealous. I don't want to do this. This is going to be an asymmetrical relationship if you want it, but no pressure. But this is all that I'm available for.
One side
for.
Will be open and not the other.
Which, yeah. So I'm going to be dating other people. You can see other people as well. But if you wanted to have a more committed relationship with me, I'm open to that. But that would mean that you wouldn't see other people and I would. And those were a lot of people don't like hearing that, but it was like very adult conversations where I stated what was available from me. And there was also like, you can opt in, out in like at any point in time, there's no handcuffs. And that worked for certain people who were like, actually, I have zero interest in dating other people.
And
it's
and
not hard for me.
You talk about like they're hard in the short term. I had a 3-year open relationship that was open on both sides. I had a 2-year one that was casual, but it was open on just my side. Like it isn't to say you can't have a longer term relationship that's not monogamous. And there are marriages, I'm sure, and families that have been together for decades and decades who are not monogamous. So it's
people are built. Also, people are built differently in terms of like what hits their jealousy button. Like some people, this is one of the big findings, is that jealousy seems to be kind of like sexual orientation, and that some people are just not having a problem. Some people really do, and it doesn't move much in my experience. Then had those experiences. And then even if my jealousy isn't being triggered, what happened in the most recent cases, super fine, the woman I was dating, really cool with it for probably the first 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 months. And then less okay, which was brilliant strategy on her part, which was, you know, cause I was like, holy crap, this is working very well. And then it became a little less okay, then a little less okay, a little less okay. And now I'm in a relationship with someone I love and care about, but the behavior that we had both agreed would be acceptable is now very upsetting to her. So I've got a couple of options at this point. I could break up, start fresh, start new. I could stop doing this, or we could just have conflict, which is what I opted to do for a while. So we just had conflict and it was honest, forthcoming, like clear, which I think was very healthy, but ultimately like draining and difficult. And then it came to a point, okay, does this end? Does this continue? We ended it and then we continued it, which is how I often do things. And so I'm not ideologically really married to one way or the other at this point. I don't think one is better. I do have a much richer understanding of the pros and cons and the difficulties that come with either. So I haven't changed my stance on it, actually. I have selected for certain difficulties and opted out of other difficulties is what I would say that I've done. But that could that change at another point in my life? 100%. I could just be like, ah, I can, this difficulty I can take, this difficulty I can't take. But I haven't had any like revolutions necessarily on the value of commitment or anything like that.
Yep. Yeah, for me, I similarly get jealous. I don't like when someone that I'm dating and care about is hooking up with other people. So I stopped after my 3 year where we were both open, I was like, okay, I'm not going to really do that again. I'll have casual relationships, or I'll have relationships where that person in a part of me being more committed to them emotionally and romantically and us being boyfriend, girlfriend will be that they will stop seeing other people. What I never found in the time that I was just hanging out, being casual, being single, or doing those types of relationships with someone who was really hyped about the idea of a one-sided open relationship. So part of the decision for me to go monogamous...
Though we should say that they are out there.
I'm just saying I never found anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't mean they don't exist. I just never was with someone who's like, I love when you go out and fuck other people. Mm-hmm. That gets me going. I wish you would do it more.
There's somebody at the gym who I overheard talking about their boyfriend. Like, do you know what a cuckold is? He like wants me to. And they were like talking about it. I think it's actually more common if like search terminology on porn websites is anything to trust, that it's actually more common in men that they want their significant other to do it than it is with women. But I don't know if that's 100%.
I'm sure it's out there. I never encountered it. No one I was dating was like, you know what I wish you would do more of? Sleeping with other women. I don't even want to be there. I just want to know you're doing it.
Yeah.
That never happened. That can happen.
Yeah.
But I never ran into that. And so I met someone I really liked. Pheromones and chemistry were strong. And I was just like, I see where this will go if we do open. I feel like I have enough experience to know we'll be together. We'll fight. It'll be a friction. It'll inevitably break it up. And I said, I don't want to go that route this time. And it wasn't like I didn't write out a list. I just wanted to date this person. And I didn't think it was going to work openly based on my experience in the past. So figured I would try monogamy, and if it made me miserable, then I would stop.
Mm-hmm. What is there a underlying question other than what is our experience with it that I forgot?
No, I think so. This person wanted to kind of, or they were struggling to make sense of it for their own life. So I think they just wanted to hear.
Try different stuff is what I would suggest. If you're like, monogamy's tough and I like the idea of open, go try open. If you say, I've tried open and it's hard, I like sleeping with other people, but I don't like when my partner does, try a one-sided open relationship. Like, do whatever.
And you want to try dating.
Yeah, yeah. You and you know, if you want to do two guys and one girl in a...
a throuple?
like a trinogamous, whatever it would be. Do that. Like, I think just if you're unclear on what's best for you, go try what calls to you.
Yeah.
And, for years. And experiment a lot.
And talk about it beforehand, you know? Talk about it often so that people can be adults and decide what kind of relationships they want to have.
Yeah, that was one thing actually that people were always surprised by when I would tell them this, but I would pre-kiss always get out there what I was hoping for. So when I was doing open, before kissing someone, I'd say, yeah, you know, what is it you're looking for? They'd say what they're looking for. What about you? So yeah, I don't date anyone exclusively. So when I'm looking for something that's open, or if not, then, you know, probably just casual until I do find someone that's open. And I thought before having those conversations that would obviously make women run for the hills. And when I told people that, they're like, oh yeah, and then obviously women run for the hills. And that was not the case. Just a lot of times you get it out there before expectations are set, before you've kissed, before you've slept together, and the person, you just kind of see them rebucket you in their head.
As what is the potential with this person? And it's like, do I want what is available with them?
Some people went, that's not for me, and I don't think we should have a second date. Some people said, that's not for me long-term, but we should just sleep together until I find someone else. I'm going to keep going on dating apps looking for a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And some people said, that's for me. Mm-hmm. Or they said, that's not for me. And then we hook up casually for 3 months. And they say, I think that is for me. I want to try it because I want to have more of a emotional closeness. It is that honesty. It doesn't have to be the first sentence you say on a date, but it's getting it out there early before they've started to fantasize about what your relationship will be like. Actually incredibly helpful in my experience.
Cool. Is that it?
Yep.
Nice. We're going to hop over to Patreon. What are we talking about?
We're going to talk about mastering stretching, the 11th man theory, and then how to achieve your 2022 goals.
All right. Very cool. So if you guys want to hop over to Patreon, keep us going. Keep money in Justin's pocket, food on his table, heat in the cold winter. He appreciates it, and we appreciate you.
Electricity going to his computer so he can keep playing League of Legends.
We're going to be over there with basically answering these questions, riffing as much as we can. So hope to see you guys there. Either way, we appreciate you. Take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.